So, Tansy.
Sir Charles.
So, you know how we like a talk of Star Wars?
We like a talk of Star War.
We love a Star War.
I love the stars and I love war, and why not combine my two great loves?
And you know how, so last week you pitched a Star Wars TV show.
Yeah, I did a lot of Star War. I like a talk of Star War.
Yeah. And also, you know how in that episode I said, fuck a Star Trek, and then I told you afterwards to leave it in.
Oh, it's in there.
I would like to welcome our guest pitch for this episode. She's the co-host of Out of Our Vulcan Minds, which is a Star Trek recap podcast. It's my friend, Lucinda Vitek.
Hey!
So glad
Hello,
to have
Lucinda.
you and your garbage franchise on the pod.
Yeah,
Oh,
we
wow.
hate you and everything you stand for, but we love you.
Thank you. As the token dumb bitch on my Star Trek podcast, I'm really excited to be the token dumb bitch on your podcast
Oh,
now. So
you're
you're
going to be
welcome.
fighting for a podium place, because welcome to Pitch Shift. It's all dumb bitches from here.
Yeah. Yeah,
Amazing.
like, I mean, Tansy and my force dyad was formed over being dumb bitches.
Yeah.
And that's a reference you wouldn't understand because you watch Star Trek and not Star Wars.
Not
I've
like
actually
cool
never
kids.
Seen a Star War.
You haven't
So
seen a single Star War.
I've never seen a Star War, and I've only seen 7 episodes of Star Trek, which are the 7 that we've recapped on our podcast.
As
So I'm
of
new
right
here.
now,
I'm new in town.
Yeah, as of at the moment, I've never seen a Star Trek episode, but I have seen a Star Wars movie. Sorry, a Star Trek movie.
I was
I've seen
gonna
a
say,
Star
of
Wars
course
movie.
You've
I've
seen a Star Wars movie.
He likes a Star Trek movie. He likes a Star Wars movie. No, but one thing that that I think we could find common ground on is that both Star Wars and Star Trek were ruined as movies by the same man, the JJ.
Not to tell on myself and spoil the podcast project that I'm currently working on, but maybe Star Wars was always broken. You considered
well,
that? You considered that it was built that way?
Yeah, no. So my thing is that they're both dumb, camp, gay, space trash in their original forms.
Yeah, I'm definitely enjoying the dumb, gay, space trash that is Star Trek. It's introducing me to just like trashy sci-fi that is definitely really new to me, and it's a real romp.
Yeah,
it's a weird show. It's sort of diversity question mark. It's like. There is some diversity, but it's like not too much diversity. We'll have like one Asian and one black person, and like that's
just
it.
Like Star Wars. Maybe
Let's
we aren't so different
away.
After all, you and
we
I.
We should overcome
oh,
our differences.
Dear.
But yeah, it's an inherently bizarre show, and I don't know if I like it, but maybe I do. I'm not sure. We'll figure it out.
Well, this show is inherently bizarre too. It is Pitch Shift. It's a show where we take songs and turn them into movies. And I'm particularly looking forward to today because I don't have to do anything, and neither does Charles, because Lucinda's going to be pitching for us.
I've come here with a pitch.
So excited.
Which, since we were talking about Out of Our Vulcan Minds, this has nothing to do with sci-fi or space. I've just come in with something completely different. I think I'm also breaking some of the, like, musical rules in your show.
There are no rules on this podcast.
Okay, great. Well, I'm going to break the imaginary rules because I'm coming with a disco song.
Why would that break Ooh. Any of our rules?
I feel like
we
you
love
guys
disco.
Do a lot of, it's mostly pop, but like,
you
I
know,
feel like
you
we
know
got
the
to
pitch
diversify.
Shift, the pitch shift rules is must be gay, no turfs, no disco, which is of course what is written outside my apocalypse bunker.
That's, I mean, to say no disco is very turfy, Tansy. I mean, to say no disco, deeply homophobic, so also that would cancel out the first rule, must be gay. So Tansy, hashtag Tansy is over party.
Much like the acronym TERF, I am full of internal logical issues and I'm dumb
right.
as fuck, so.
Right. We've done some disco adjacent.
Yeah.
Like I did a George Benson.
I did some Dua Lipa. Like
that song's pretty
okay.
disco. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so the song that I'm doing is Maxine Nightingale's "Right Back Where We Started From." It's a great song.
Ooh, and it's all right, and it's coming home. We gotta get right back to where we started from. Love is good. Love can be strong. We gotta get right back to where we started from.
Which I became reacquainted with after watching the second season of The Umbrella Academy. I don't know if either of you guys have watched it.
I have not.
Not at
and
all.
Like my entire experience of it has been the John Mulaney Facebook group I'm in posting pictures
yes.
of that boy in a school uniform with an axe and saying John Mulaney on his way to kill Princess
Killed
Diana.
Yeah, I've seen that.
But also, like, I cannot for the life of me remember what John Mulaney bit he killed Princess Diana in. So I'm like, is this like fanon now that John Mulaney killed Princess Diana?
It's the one where his mum comes into the room. I think it's in the bit where he's talking about how both of his parents are lawyers. But his mum comes into the room and she's like, I have just learned that Princess Diana was killed in a car crash, and like kind of makes it sound like she thinks he's responsible. And his response is, Mom, I have been here all night, you know, and kind of like, I didn't have anything to do with it since it was Chicago and I was 11. Like, but that's where that it's partly that, and partly the theory that John Mulaney has never aged and will never age.
I don't think he will. I assume he's like he's a less conspicuous Keanu.
Yeah, he's a tall child.
Once the world has burned and society has crumbled and the sun has burnt out, it will just be John Mulaney on the husk of this dead earth telling jokes about not
John Mulaney being
Diana.
Like, I didn't destroy the world. I was in Chicago in bed and I was 36.
I was over on the bench. Where were you when the world was destroyed, John?
I was over on the bench. And then it like cuts to a flashback where John Mulaney, through a series of mishaps, has ended up on the Supreme Court of the United States of America. And he's like, I was on the bench.
Oh, no.
So I feel like, just because we always forget to do this, this is a podcast where we take a song, we pitch a movie based on it. Lucinda's going to be pitching. Charles and I will be cold-hearted movie producers sitting there chewing cigars, throwing stones at small children and saying, but where are the titties? So yeah, that's the show.
So one thing that I think I'm going to need from you guys is, when I am Charlie approached me to be on your amazing podcast, I mentioned, So two key problems, Charlie. I never listen to song lyrics and I cannot remember any actors' names. So I think...
Well, you've come to the right two people, because...
I need you guys to cast this for me. And there are also a couple of holes in the plot that I think I will need help from you guys to, like, fill in.
If we're good at two things here, it's kicking goals and filling plot holes.
Perfect. So I want the story to start feeling like a horror film. So we've got a couple. I've named them John and Maria. And I want them to be the sort of most basic kind of late 20s couple living in a big city, doing boring jobs and being a regular kind of couple. So
are
we're talking
like
maybe
all American couple, like apple
all
pie
American
sweet,
yeah,
baby,
sure.
Boo, is it Taylor Swift and her boring boyfriend
Joe Alwyn?
I think it could be, I don't know, it needs to definitely be like a sort of a couple that you could believe, where one works at a bank and one works for, like, I don't know, like an insurance agency, like just filling in forms and doing boring shit.
Let's see.
I don't know if Taylor Swift is too like hot and young and I wouldn't say it, but like hot and young to like be doing that kind of stuff, and for you to go like, sure.
Okay.
Why not?
Someone who's a bit more of a dollar store, like still... incredible actor, incredibly beautiful, but more like a real person. Aaliyah Sharkwatt from Arrested Development.
Which one is she in Arrested Development?
She's maybe. She was the cousin that George Michael was in love with.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Perfect. Yeah. She'd be great. And then we need like a really kind of regular looking kind of white dude who's just like every kind of shitty boyfriend that you've ever met.
Oh, Lord.
You need like a sort of, like, who's the... the uncle of what's her face in Arrested Development, like kind of that vibe, but younger,
like a young Jason Bateman type.
Yes, yes,
yeah.
It's always that thing where like there's an abundance of boring white male actors, but when it comes to having to think of one for one of these pitches, it's always like, what are any of them called? Picture Andrew Garfield. Yeah, Logan LeMann.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
You, maybe you're Alden Ehrenreich? Alden Ehrenreich?
I literally don't know any of these people.
You're young Harrison Ford. He played Han Solo in the Solo movie.
I think you'll find it's pronounced Han Solo.
Han, who has no family and
Han
friends.
Han got no friends.
Neville, no one likes him.
Oh, wait, no, wait, wait. You've just burst this thing wide open when you said Neville. It's the guy who played Neville. It's that dude.
Ah,
he's
Matthew
he's
Lewis.
Making a comeback at the moment. He's in that movie with Rose Matafeo.
Yes. That's kind of the vibe we're wanting. Mm-hmm. Okay, so John and Maria, they work in the city and they hate it. They hate the sort of hectic city life. They hate the rise and grind culture. They hate the fact that they have to spend all their time working in their boring jobs. Mm-hmm. Then suddenly, John gets some sort of inheritance, some sort of elderly relative passes away, and he goes, I know, we're going to move out of the city. We're going to move into a house that has a backyard in, like, the suburbs. So we're not talking, like, full in the country, but, like, definitely where they've got room to roam and, like, stretch out a little bit more, yeah? Mm-hmm.
Room for a nursery.
Could be
a nursery.
But when they move into the house, right, it's super dated. It's like, it's really old. Everything's kind of orange and brown. And they're sort of like, oh, we need to sort of do up this house. It might be a bit of a fixer-upper, but maybe it could bring us closer together. But straight away, after they move into the house, spooky stuff starts happening. So Maria is the only one that notices it, though, because as per every horror film trope, only the woman notices the spooky stuff and has the spooky stuff happen to her.
And John is a dumb bitch.
And John is a dumb bitch who, you know, sleeps with the door open and all that sort of bullshit that's going to get you got by a ghost.
He's just like, oh,
it's the suburbs. We don't have to lock the door.
He's like, oh, sleeping? How about I just trail one leg over the side of the bed with my exposed ankle?
And Maria's like, could you do like one fucking thing for me? Could you lock the door? And John's like, babe, you're so tense. Why don't you just chill out? And it's like, oh, John, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, and he's constantly walking around like, oh, yeah, there's ghosts in there. Oh, if there are any spirits present. And she's like, no, that's how it goes wrong in the movies.
He, like, buys a Ouija board and Maria's like, could you fucking not?
Like,
could
you want? Do you want to be like Mika in Paranormal Activity? Do you? Do you, John?
You remember how that ends? So Maria's the only one who's noticing the spooky stuff. So sort of initially it starts off as kind of standard affair horror, right? So you got like the doors slamming shut and the lights flickering and sort of she starts hearing music in other rooms. But as she gets to the other room, the music kind of stops and she's like, oh, this is really eerie, kind of electronics turning off.
Is it creepy lullaby doll music or is it like hearing through the walls of a party where we started from?
It's like hearing through the walls right back where we started from. So like sort of disco.
Why is the house always playing disco?
Yeah, it's like, it's not scary music, but the fact that like she can't seem to locate where it's from or where it's coming from and who put it on, it's just sort of like eerie.
Can I throw something in that might, like, feel free to know this?
Please.
But when they're buying the house, could it be that they're like, wow, this is a great location. It's a really nice house. It's a bit of a fixer-upper. Why is it so cheap? And the real estate agent is just like, oh, it's haunted. And John's like, ha-ha, it's haunted. And Maria's like, ha-ha, it's haunted. And they move in, they're like, oh, it's haunted.
It's super
so basically,
haunted.
So basically like the beginning of Amityville Horror.
Yeah.
Mm.
Where they have a discussion, but it's like, oh, but that terrible stuff happened here. What if it's haunted? And like James Brolin's like, houses don't have memories. And like, then the rest of the movie happens.
And you need John just to be like several steps behind. So like it takes him like, you know, several more days to actually believe Maria that it's haunted. He's just such a dumb bitch.
and he's like, hey, I've been thinking, this house might be haunted. She's like, that's what I've been saying. For a week.
While they're looking at a ghost being like, oh, yeah. Babe. Oh, yeah, that's... babe, I think it might be haunted. And Maria's like, Jesus Christ, John, can you fucking listen to me for 2 seconds?
Oh, no.
But in terms of, like, the haunting stuff, it starts sort of escalating. So Maria wakes up in the middle of the night and she hears what could only be described as something rolling down the hallway. Like, what is this rolling down the hallway? But again, she opens the door and there's nothing there. She's doing the laundry and a bunch of leg warmers start turning up in her clothes washing. And she's just like, these aren't mine. All these sort of things start showing up. Anyway, this ends up causing a rift between John and Maria, right? Because John thinks that it's just Maria regretting the move and trying to get them to move back to the city. And he's like, babe, we've moved here now. We've left the city behind. Why can't you just commit to this decision we made as a couple? And Maria's like, can you just listen to me? I am telling you the house is haunted.
He's telling you right now. It's a metaphor.
And she's like, it's no. I'm being very literal. I am so literal. The house is haunted with ghosts. And he's like, And anyway, then Maria ends up meeting Maxine, So Maxine is the ghost of the house.
Okay.
So it needs to like escalate and escalate and escalate to the point where Maxine the ghost materializes in front of Maria. And Maria's like, oh shit, I knew I was right. But Maxine isn't super scary, but she is like, I'm thinking she looks exactly like Maxine Nightingale.
Yeah.
She has like a large sort of fro. She's wearing like flared pants. She's got like aviator sunglasses on. She's like full 70s, like done up, like makeup, nails, like disco outfit. She's got rollerblades on. She's looking amazing. But she's like obviously also a ghost. Instead of like the sort of traditional like Victorian ghost or like super old ghost, she's a ghost from like
the
1976.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So like, is she wearing rollerblades in death?
She is wearing rollerblades in death. She's scooting around. Turns out that she was...
Oh my god, instead of just floating around, you just hear like this malevolent around. Like...
Yes.
And that's what they ended up hearing when they heard the rolling down the hallway. It was her rollerblading around the house.
Yeah.
Also the idea that she's like, I'm a ghost, I can rollerblade upstairs now. Like,
ooh. Yeah, never trip over in these rollerblades. If I bang into the wall, I just go right through it. It's the best.
Mm-hmm. So... Maxine ends up telling Maria, I didn't really mean them to both have M names, but this is just how it worked out. Maxine tells Maria that she died being crushed by a grand piano when they moved it into their house. So both her and her husband were crushed when they tried to move in a grand piano into the house because Maxine is like a musician of some sort. Whatever, don't worry about it. So the reason why Maxine is haunting the house and can't leave is because she's mad at her husband who caused the accident that led to their death.
She got some of that unfinished business. Can I just interrupt with a brilliant idea for a like major 4-quadrant blockbuster?
Mm-hmm.
Unfinished business. It's about a ghost stock trader who wants to start a business. They just want to do capitalism after death because it's inescapable.
It's a joint between Blumhouse Studios and Adam McKay.
The ghost is played by Adam Sandler in an unexpectedly dramatic turn.
Yes. This is how I win.
Can Adam Sandler play the same character that he plays in Uncut Gems? Like the same energy?
Yes, that energy with a ghost who is trying to trade stocks.
I have a suggested casting for Maxine.
Yes.
Janelle Monáe.
Oh, yes!
Yes.
That would be like that. You got that singing, dancing, acting talent
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm.
Yep.
Cool.
Maybe they can do a cover of Right Back Where We Started From by Janelle Monáe at the end credits.
That'd be funky as fuck.
Right? It'd be amazing. I think that's on the table now. It can't be taken off. That's it. That's part of the film.
It's a package.
So Maria ends up going back to John and she tells John, hey, I've met Maxine, the ghost of the house. We need to get her and her husband, Kevin, back together so that they can leave us the fuck alone in our house. Otherwise they'll get haunted
forever. I love it so much.
And so John is like, babe, you need to get it together. Anyway, shortly after, John ends up meeting Kevin, which is Maxine's husband, and he's like, oh, Kevin. Shit, a ghost right in front of me. And here's the thing. So Kevin's unfinished business is that he resents Maxine for making them move out of the city. So they have a similar situation. So in their relationship, Maxine was the one who wanted to get out of her crazy city life, move to the country, and like write a disco album like in the suburbs and have her space or whatever.
Famed place for writing disco albums. The suburbs.
She needs like space. She needs her space to be creative and like hear her own voice.
I want a corridor I can rollerblade down.
I got to rollerblade down and just like feel myself. And Kevin resents moving away from his friends and his family. He doesn't bring up the fact that he was the reason why they're dead, funnily enough.
Well, I'm sure that he would say that actually it's her fault because he wouldn't have had to move the piano in the first place. Yeah.
That's true. So they both have their resentments and they've basically both been haunting the same house but like not talking to each other, which is, you know,
competitive
cool
haunting.
And healthy.
Like, I'm gonna be more scary than you. Fuck you, Maxine.
No, I'm gonna rollerblade down the hallway this time. Try and fucking stop me. And I think they're both just excited because the house has been abandoned for so long. So finally, they've got people to haunt. So they haven't.
I just needed a girlfriend to talk to about this.
So Maxine and Maria are hanging out. John and Kevin are hanging out. But eventually, John and Maria figure out that they have to get this couple back together because at the end of the day, this is their house. And they
need these ghosts to fuck off.
So they end up coming together and John's like, oh shit, Maria, I'm so sorry. This house is totally haunted. And Maria's just like, yeah,
you think?
Dude, I fucking told you. And so they have to start creating these sort of dates for Maxine and Kevin to sort of come together.
So they're like, now, is this like basically set it up, but ghosts? Yes.
So it's
ghost
point
parent trap.
Yes. It sort of shifts now from like a horror film to a rom-com.
I love it.
Did you have thoughts as to what kind of actor for Kevin?
Oh yeah, we haven't talked about Kevin very much. I think he's like older. Maybe the relationship...
Older than her, Maxine.
I think maybe a little bit older than Maxine. I'm thinking like... honestly, I don't know. If you guys have any sort of ideas on who... Maxine would definitely be the sort of... And I don't like using this terminology, but maybe the sort of more dominant and sort of interesting person in the relationship. And sort of Kevin sort of sits back a little bit more and is sort of happy
so,
being himself.
So kind of like Maria and John.
A little bit.
You got a more interesting lady and a man who's like, I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah.
I think
just,
Kevin has
just feel very
like...
lucky to be here.
I think Kevin has like less of a dumb bitch energy like John does. And Kevin's more just like, I don't need to be in the limelight. I'm just happy like being me and just like chilling out. Maxine's the one who's like the pop star or whatever. I'm just happy to like have a cup of tea of an afternoon. You know what I mean?
This might be the wrong steer, but like Clark Gregg is what came to mind.
I don't know who that is.
Agent Coulson from all those Marvel films.
I don't watch Marvel
films. Sorry, I don't watch those. I'm pretty.
I don't know if you know, but like I'm hot, so like I don't watch stuff.
Can I offer something that is in a very different direction to Charles's offer?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Orlando Bloom.
That also works.
Okay.
Because if we're going with man married to pop star who's not very interesting, I mean...
And I mean, Bloom do have that dumb bitch energy, though.
He drinks a big glass of dumb bitch juice every morning with breakfast.
So I think that this is where I need, like, a little bit of you guys' help. Mm-hmm. In the sense that, like, what is a ghost date? What would a ghost date look like?
Like, it could start off with them going about it the wrong way. And they're like, we just need these two ghosts to talk to each other because they were a couple. And once they actually talk, they'll be fine. So they, like, fumigate every room but one in the house with sage. So they, like, burn out and leave them stuck in one room. And, of course,
we're
that doesn't
fucking
work.
We're not saging them out. We're saging them in.
That doesn't work because that's not how people communicate.
Yeah. And I think that, like, we could have a montage of their, like, failed attempts and where they sort of try and sage them in and then the ghosts end up just throwing furniture around and, like, doing
I was going to say,
shit.
And, like, you see, like, it keeps, like fucking up the house's electricity so bad that, like, the light bulbs explode. And they're just constantly... You got, like, constantly just buying new light bulbs. Like, oh, we got to buy a new toaster. Oh, got to get a new microwave.
And then you have the lyrics of Right Back Where We Started From, like going over the top, like some sort of pop sort of disco vibes going over. But I think, and if we go back to the lyrics of the song for a minute, you've got the, do you remember that day, that sunny day when you first came my way? And then this is where Maria has a brainwave. She's like, we need to recreate their first date.
Cute.
Or when they first met. So John has to go and chat with Kev. Only the boys can talk and only the girls can talk. I'm bringing some really like weird gender vibes here, but just like go with it. It's chill. There's rules. It's fine. Don't worry about it. So Maxine and Maria are like chatting and like Maxine's describing the date. And then John and Kevin are meeting up and like they're sort of talking about the feelings and like how the date went. And so Maria and John get together and plan this like elaborate date. But here's the thing. in the process of planning this date for the ghosts and, you know, buying all the stuff that's needed and setting the scene.
Turning the house into a roller derby rink.
They have to bring in, like, their friends and they're like, it's a 70s-themed party.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, okay. And then Maxine and Kevin have to pretend they're not ghosts and they're meeting each other for the first time in this 70s-themed party.
Or just, like, they keep talking about Maxine and Kevin and their friends are like, who? And it's like, oh, just new friends that we made. You don't know them. It's like, oh, when are your friends Maxine and Kevin coming? And Maxine and Kevin are standing right there, but they can't be seen.
They were here all along.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, they'll be here later.
So they end up making this party and they finally bring Maxine and Kevin together. They meet in the middle of the dance floor. They're like rollerblading around. I know one thing about the 70s.
It's rollerblading.
You gotta go down to the roller rink.
Like someone said, quick, what happened in the 70s? And I'm like, ah, roller discos. And everyone's like, great, that's enough information. Goodbye. And I'm like, oh shit. Yeah, I think we could have a lot of fun building the playlist that mm-hmm. happens while John and Maria are trying to balance, you know, hosting their friends and hosting this 70s themed party and trying to bring Maxine and Kevin together. We could have some ABBA going on, I think. We could have
a little bit of Earth, Wind, and Fire.
And I feel like what actually needs to bring Maxine and Kevin together is the fact that they're like, that isn't fucking 70s. And like, they're the only people they can talk to about like how inaccurate this party is.
Anyway, and then as they start like chatting and dancing together, Maxine and Kevin end up forgiving each other for their transgressions. And as the sort of music builds in the middle of the dance floor, they kind of float up and twist around together and sort of lift up into like not being ghosts anymore. Whether that's heaven or the afterlife or just like being at rest, whatever that
means. They go to disco heaven.
They go to the
big roller rink in the sky.
And like as they go into disco heaven, the Lady Gaga song Disco Heaven plays.
And they're like, this isn't 70.
And then because yeah, they...
This is from the 2000s.
But because they questioned our Lord and Saviour Lady Gaga, they then get sent to the Disco Inferno.
And they're like, this is actually more of our speed, thank you.
And the devil's just trying to attach rollerblades to hooves.
Devil's like, burn, baby, burn.
And then we reach the end of the film. So they clean up after the party and, you know, John and Maria have this newfound bond of going through this experience together. I think they've got a lot more respect for each other because, you know, John knows to like listen to Maria when she's telling him something, and Maria learns that she can rely on John if she needs to. So it brings them closer together. And then there's sort of like a in 5 years time scene. Ooh. So they end up sort of like this experience really fundamentally changes them. So John ends up writing a best-selling novel about the experience and about Maxine and Kevin.
Yes, I love it.
So he writes this book and it's like, it's fiction, but it's just, it's what happened. And it ends up being a best-selling book and he's touring around the world. And then Maria is inspired to use her talents of speaking to the dead to free other stuck spirits, which I think is a perfect time to start a franchise where Maria goes to other haunted houses.
It's and Paranormal Activity, but rom-coms.
I was going to say it's like 70s Ed and Lorraine Warren from the Conjuring universe, but that's also the 70s. It's just like not a fun version of the 70s. But it's so she just like mainly disco ghosts.
Discos.
Yeah, but like they're not discos from the current day. So yeah. I think maybe she could do ones from like different periods. So we've already had the 70s one. So maybe she could go back and do like maybe like a 90s one or an 80s one. Oh. So she can do ones from different periods and we can have different aesthetics.
And then she does a 40s ghost and it's a stealth sequel to Run Away With Me.
Yes!
It's a crossover. Yeah.
Finally, a crossover in the Pitch Shift cinematic universe.
Yeah, because there's not been any of those yet.
Yeah, I love that. That's like a really good form of like setup franchise and sequel potential in the last
5 minutes of, because it's that thing where it's not like you see like, oh, maybe they didn't defeat the monster after all. It's like, hey, this person got a new lease on life, and that new lease on life involves maybe freeing ghosts from this mortal plane.
Yeah, and I think that this idea has combined two interests of mine, which is horror films and fear of conflict.
I love it.
It's like, imagine a horror film where it's just like mild disagreement throughout.
Yeah, a conflict mediation.
Yeah, it's just everyone like finally sitting down and talking calmly. Yeah, which is the only way I can deal with any problem.
Truly, if you want a horror movie without conflict, it's just like, it's an augmented reality experience where they make you make a doctor's appointment.
Oh, fuck.
I'm not going to lie, though. I thought you were going to end with them being like, damn, we really have sorted out our problems. Yes, we have. You know what? I'd like to get more into music. Yeah, let's get that grand piano.
Yeah, I was going to say, the one thing that I would want to add to this is a similar scene where they nearly get killed by a grand piano.
Yeah, maybe the real ghost all along was the grand piano.
Yes. Also, like, the idea that as the haunting escalates, they start hearing the sounds of, like, a grand piano crashing to the ground around the house. It's like, who just slammed a piano into a brick wall? Did you? John? And John's like, oh.
I just realized as well that if I have to think of like a way to kill someone in a humorous way in a film, I'm just like, what would Looney Tunes do? It was either that or an anvil.
Yeah. Acme brand anvil. It's very, yeah. I like, it's yeah, fun. It's very like, you know, The Conjuring meets The Parent Trap.
With a little bit of Housebound and Beetlejuice twisted in, yes. I think.
Which is what you want.
That's always what you want.
Yeah.
That was so fun.
So fun. Thanks. Should we do a bit of shuffle?
We should. Let's do some shuffle. We haven't done a shuffle in a while.
We haven't. All right, we're going to do some shuffle, and we're going to start with Maxine Nightingale's Lead Me On. I have often heard you say you love me as a friend, but I love you more than anyone. You know I can't pretend no longer. I mean, the idea that instantly comes to mind is a friend zone horror movie, but we've probably pitched that like 3 or 4 times before.
Yeah, I feel like we have. It's also, I mean, you know, surprising reversal of the friend zone.
Yeah.
This time she's in the friend zone. But it's sort of, it's also like the tone of the lyrics is a little bit not quite that, because of the idea of like, the idea is like, I know to some extent that you are leading me on, but that's okay.
Mm.
It's interesting. I like, it's just, it's a chill vibe. Let's see, what is not?
I mean, the alternate is that it's about some sort of bounty hunter.
Oh.
Who's like tracking someone down and knows
falling in love with them.
Yeah, and like knows that they're being given the runaround and like could probably cut this short and actually like get them into jail, but they're like, this is too much fun, go on, lead me on, let's go to New Mexico. I'm keen for like a bit of this in Albuquerque, like whatever.
I think there's like that. Another thing, and I mean this may not be a great idea, but I'm gonna say it anyway. Whenever I'm listening to it, I'm like, maybe it could be the story of someone who like loses their eyesight in a sudden accident and then has to work with like a carer who like guides them to sort of teach them how to use like guide dogs or whatever. And then it ends up being like a meet cute and they fall in love. I just love a romance.
We love here at Pitch Shift. those are some fun ideas.
Should we go hide away?
I gotta say, the first thing that comes to my mind is Disco Vampire.
Yes.
You know, like, come on, Valentino, come to my hideaway, like, go into your secret hiding place and, like, showing you what I could do, like, etc.
Also, like 3:45 in the morning. How else are you supposed to be awake unless you're a vampire? Yeah.
Well, I mean, people could party for long times back in the day, and also now, I guess.
Sounds fake, but okay.
Yeah, I like the idea that it's like, you know, you're kind of following a cool dude at the disco. He's like the life of the party, blah, 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 and he sees a mysterious woman. And she's like, oh, do you want to come back to my, you know, come back to my place? And then it's kind of like revealed that what she wants is kind of a game of cat and mouse where he's the mouse and she's a vampire.
I just also love the idea of mixing 70s style with vampire, which is basically just going to be all black versions of everything that Lando Calrissian wears in Star Wars. But
yes. Yeah. And also it should Donald Glover should be
absolutely
the guy in that.
Yes.
Donald Glover and like Grace Jones.
Yes.
I think an alternative one could be that if you've got like some sort of like Maxine Nightingale or Maxine Nightingale stand-in, who's sort of like some disco queen who's earned like millions and millions of dollars, but then becomes like sort of an apocalypse prepper. Mm. And so she's built this sort of like underground city. And then that the world is starting to end, she's like, come to my hideaway. And she's got this like underground city where she can like curate who gets to live and who gets to die.
Hell yeah.
I'm into it.
All right. Should we look at our last one? Gotta be the one?
Let's do it.
Okay, this is potentially very dumb.
Mm-hmm. I love dumb.
But
no such thing as a good idea, Tansy.
But within the lyrics, it's along the lines of gotta break you from this spell I've put you under.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know how, like, every young girl goes through a witchcraft phase?
Yep.
Okay, so, like, an 11-year-old girl casts a love spell on her celebrity crush. Who's like
oh my God,
20-something man who's suddenly like, I gotta go to like Melbourne to be with my one true love, this 11-year-old girl.
Yes. Oh, I love that.
And she's just like, oh no, I have meddled with things I do not understand.
I mean, that's a movie that Ted Cruz will not approve of. Ted Cruz and the QAnon crew.
But I mean, like,
will not approve of that film.
Ted Cruz's favorite movie is Princess Bride, which means I share one opinion with Ted Cruz. So
wait, is it actually Princess Bride?
Yeah, he loves Princess Bride.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even a broken clock is right man. Twice a day, you know.
Even he's a broken he's right Zodiac exactly killer is right twice a day.
I like that idea. I had a slightly different idea.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff about, like, you know, I don't love you anymore, but I've got to be the one to tell you. I got to be the one to dry your tears when we say goodbye. Like the idea that it's like, I don't love you anymore, but, like, I care about you enough that I want this to be
amicable.
Not a terrible experience telling you. So, like, kind of the reverse of, Tansy, your pitch for fuck somebody, where it's someone trying to break up with someone, but they're trying to do it in the most... like, in the best no-hurt-feelings-y kind of way.
Instead of trying to make them cheat on you.
Yeah. That they're just like, I have to do the perfect breakup because I don't want this person to be sad at all. And it's like, that's obviously not possible, so hilarity ensues. Somehow, hilarity ensues.
Yeah, I think they're both strong contenders.
Both good contenders.
Yeah.
So, Lucinda, on Out of Our Vulcan Minds...
Mm-hmm.
You do a segment, what was the horniest moment?
Yes, my favorite segment.
So I thought we could just, you know, in honor of your very good podcast, we could just, what do we think was the horniest moment of the pitch today?
What was the horniest moment of the pitch?
It was clearly when someone rollerbladed down a corridor. Like,
that's pretty horny. I think finally escaping this mortal realm was the horniest moment
going
for
to
me.
The disco inferno.
Finally going to the disco inferno is definitely the horniest moment for me. Not having to exist.
Surely
anymore.
It's moving to the suburbs and owning real estate. Like,
that is pretty horny. Mm,
so horny to own a house. Sexy mortgage. Well, I was gonna say, and this isn't in the, this is just a thing that I think would be fun for that, like in the montage of kind of like failed dates, like the idea that like one of the dates that they set up gets them so mad, the ghost so mad that they have like hate sex.
Ooh, interesting.
Which fully breaks the whole house. And they're like, is this a good outcome?
They're like, is it working? It's not working.
This conversation is had in a Home Depot as they're getting all new light bulbs and fixtures.
Yes.
They're in Home Depot being like, if only you just didn't let them fuck it on the good china. And everyone in Home Depot is like, what are they talking about?
But also, and like the Home Depot guy's like, hey, weren't you guys in here last week to buy a toaster? And they're like, yes. And it's like, why? But you're buying another. And they're like, yes.
Maria would straight up be like,
toaster.
Thanks, our house is haunted.
And he's like, he's oh, like, you're oh, in the okay, haunted house.
Oh, yeah, you live on...
123 Hort Street.
Smith Drive.
You live on Elm Street? Oh, interesting.
Where can people find more of you, Lucinda, including Out of Our Volcan Minds?
Listen to Out of Our Volcan Minds on wherever you listen. I guess you could follow me on Instagram at Lucinda Ellen. And I guess if you really want to follow my shit Twitter, it's Theatre Pleb.
How about you, Charles?
Well, people can follow me on Twitter at Garls Ochady. They can also find me on Letterboxd as like Charles O'Geeg or something, talking about shitty horror films and etc. What about you, Tansy?
You can find me on Twitter at Tansy Clipboard or Instagram, if you're nasty, at Tansy Meg. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Lucinda.
Thanks.
Thank you.
This was a lot of fun.
Everyone, seriously, you should listen to Out of Our Volcan Minds. It is a very interesting feminist discussion around Star Trek. Very funny. My favorite episode so far has been the one about the naked time.
That's my favorite too.
So yeah, listen to that. Leave it a good review. Also, listen to our podcast. Leave us a good review.
Do it.
You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. You might as well. Yeah. Twitter and Instagram at Pitchshift Pod. We're on Facebook, Pitchshift Podcast, and you can also email us, pitchshiftpodcast@gmail.com.
I don't have any idea how to end this episode.
Well, I mean, we could always just get right back to where we started from.
It's all right.
So,
I hate you.
Yeah, I mean, it's coming along. So, Tansy, let's start the episode.
This podcast is recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri, Wiradjuri and Boonwurrung people. Sovereignty was never ceded and this always was and always will be Aboriginal land.